from the rooftop to your doorstop and everything in between. It's Mr. Fix-It Tim Noteboom on It Takes Two with Amy and JJ.
Tim Noteboom in the studio again. Welcome back.
Hi, guys. What a beautiful day.
I know. It is spring. Man, we had some spring in February. We gave it up for March, but now it's back for April.
Yep.
And we're liking that.
Yeah.
We're liking that. Yep. What kind of projects are you doing around your house right now?
I thought about that. Well, this weekend with some of the frost, we had some heavy frost a couple times, and then it would melt early. And so I noticed I had a couple of corners of my gutters that were dripping just a little bit. And one of them happens to drip right on the sidewalk where we walk into our main entrance. So it's like, okay, now when that gets dry, I guess that's on my project list to go up there and clean that corner piece out and put some caulking in there and get it sealed up. And not a big project, but just something that caught my eye.
What about those folks who go up there and say, like, gosh, it looks like, you know, some of these nails are maybe pulling away a little bit. You know, what should you be looking for in the spring on your gutters to say, there might be something more than just, you know, a quick dab or two here.
Right. Yeah. Some, you know, and some of it could be caused if you had some ice damming or heavy snow or things moving off. So you can have the older style gutter that had regular gutter nails that were like 6 or 8 inch long nails. A lot of times they'll work themselves out and you can push them back in because the hole now in the wood is softened up or opened up enough that the nail doesn't hold. So you can look at maybe putting some screws in alongside there. Sometimes gutters get bent or damaged, and you can straighten those out as much best you can anyway. Get them refastened. And then look at your downspout extensions. Now is a great time. Snow is gone. All the traffic's gone around the house. Get those extensions down and make sure they are taking that water away from the house.
Do you power wash your siding? Speaking of spring and cleaning, do you do that yearly?
I have not. You know, most of the homes I've been in have steel siding, and they've been more of a darker color, so they don't tend to show too much dust and dirt. So, but there are, you see a lot of light color whites and tans and beiges that get a lot of dirt on them, and you can certainly wash them. You have to wash it with the... what I want to say, with the seam, there's an overlap every 12 feet. So you don't want to wash against that because you'd force that water into that overlap. So you want to wash with the grain, we call it.
You also don't want to shoot up.
Right.
You know,
that's
like,
the other thing.
Because
so
that'll get up and over that little curve there.
Yep. So you got to start top down, which means you might need a little step ladder to start at the top and spray everything down. And just don't get too aggressive on it. Sometimes just a light spray and even a soft broom, and you can broom it, and it'll take a lot of that dirt off.
Are you someone that has an in-ground sprinkler system?
Yes.
Yes. And do you have those serviced in spring?
Yeah. You know, I thought about doing them on my own. In the spring, I don't. In the spring, I know how to turn the valves the right direction, close all the bleeders off and everything, and turn it back on. So I do that myself. But in the fall, I have it professionally done. I've got air compressors, but you need a lot of volume. You don't need pressure. You need volume.
There's a reason they bring that towable giant. Tim, I'm in the same boat, and I only started turning on my sprinkler like 3 or 4 years ago. I found a YouTube video, bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
It took me about 5 minutes. I mean, I had a couple trips down to the basement where I'm like, okay, no. It's when it's in line with the pipe, that means it's
turned on. That means it's open.
You know, like.
Yeah. That means it's open. So, yeah, there's only, you know, 3 or 4 things you open or close and get shut down in order to turn the sprinklers on. So it's not that difficult. So it's just a step-by-step process, and most people can do that.
I keep getting flyers in the mail from local companies talking about how it doesn't matter how old your sprinkler system is, they can add a new Wi-Fi enabled sprinkler control to it.
Correct.
And so they can come in and hook it up, and I'm really thinking about it because controlling it from my phone sounds pretty dang good.
Yeah. Yeah, they make those controllers. In fact, we installed 3 of them.
Oh, really?
On a Rainbird systems, and they watch the weather forecast. They can actually foresee that, you know, as good as a weather forecast is, I guess. But then they won't water if they believe there's water coming or rain coming. But you can also look at it when you're on vacation or look at it from your office or somewhere else or your recliner and say, ah, it's a good time to water, and you can just change it.
You know, Dave DeCock says you need about an inch of water every week to, you know, get your lawn where it needs to be. And that was the thing, you know, this, well, it can tell if it's going to rain, but then it also gets data from that to be say like, okay, we're expecting 2 inches of rain. Well, we actually only end up getting half an inch locally. So it knows, okay, well, we're not going to skip tomorrow because of it. I just, any time that the internet can be smarter than me, I always love it. Let's get to some of these questions here in our text club. Mr. Fix-It, are there companies that will only do one window replacement? So
yes.
I think they're wondering about the smaller projects.
Correct. There are companies out there, and several of them, many of them will do one or two or three windows. They don't necessarily need to do the whole house. There might be some cost savings in doing 10 windows compared to one, but they certainly will do one at a time. And for people that are on a budget or just a remodeling plan, doing one or two at a time, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't see a problem with that.
Would you ever tell someone to buy all the windows at once if they're on sale and then just wait to put them in as the, you get that?
If you're planning to do it yourself, you can do that. If you know that, okay, this year I budgeted X amount of time to put in two or three windows, you can try that idea if you'd like. If you're hiring it done, yeah, then you just want to go with as needed and as you're doing it.
Someone said, I want to put a solid color stain on my cedar deck that penetrates into the wood. Any suggestions on what type to use?
Well, yeah, there's some oil-based stains and latex stains. Oil-based is a penetrating type stain, and that's what's going to get into the wood, into the fibers, and actually last longer than some. A latex stain is more like a paint because it stays on the surface. And then it has a chance to peel off or rub off if it's not adhering good, where a penetrating stain. So you want something that's going to penetrate.
So an oil is what you're looking
oil-based
for.
Oil-based stain is
oil
my preference. Stain. Yeah.
Now, okay. Any reason why someone would choose a latex over an oil?
I suppose if you've already got a product on there that needs to be covered up or you're changing it, or if you're changing the color and it won't penetrate what you already have on your deck.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. That maybe be one of the only reasons I'd look at some of those cover up type products.
So if I'm getting this right, if you've never stained your deck before, or if it's been a very long time, that oil can get in there and it's going to protect it a little bit better. But if you stained your deck 5 years ago,
you're probably
not going to get as deep in with what you want. So you might try the latex.
Yep. You could try a latex on top of that. Yeah.
Okay. What about on patio pavers? I know that people sometimes do like a protectant
sealers
over there. Yeah.
Sealer, patio pavers and concrete patios, all of those could easily take a nice sealant. So they have concrete sealers that you broom on or you can roll them on. You can squeegee them on depending on your surface. And they make all kinds of them. And they're all up and down the board as far as price line. What they cost and what they're going to do. We've got a stamped patio, which is colored, and I end up doing it every year, even though the product says, yep, it's going to last, you know, 2 to 3 years. After 1 year, it seems like it's faded just a little bit, and if I wait too long, then I waited too long. I had to pressure wash the whole thing and use products to try to peel off what was left because putting a new product on top, it wasn't going to adhere well. So then I had to start over. So now I'm doing it every year, and it just takes, you know, a half hour to go out there and broom on, or roll on is what I use. It just roll on the product. And
it makes it look like it's constantly wet a little bit, right? Yep. Like it deepens the color
It brings out the color. It gives it a little shine. There is a couple things to consider because the more of the glossier look you get, the more wet look. Tends to be a little slipperier if it happens to be damp at all. So maybe a semi-gloss or a matte finish might do you well, unless you really like that high gloss finish and shine, that wet look.
Yeah. Someone said, I've been noticing on new houses the exhaust vent for garage heaters are being vented through the side of the house rather than the roof. Is there a reason for this, or is one way better than the other?
My preference is always through the roof. only because if you go out the side, you typically need to make sure you're outside the overhang, because the fumes, unless they close off the intake vents on that overhang, otherwise it has the opportunity to suck some of that carbon dioxide and that carbon monoxide into the attic, mm-hmm. and start giving you a problem there. So, yep. And then the heat going in the attic, if it's bringing that in, that extra heat, it could frost a little in there too, where it draws it in.
Someone said, Mr. Fix-It, I want to wash my vinyl siding. Do you have any homemade solutions to use?
Homemade solution. I knew that there was a lot of them out there where people would use Dawn dish soap because it rinses off easy, or mm-hmm. some sort of product like that.
Doesn't hurt your yard.
Right. Yep. Something eco-friendly. There's a lot of what they call orange products now. Those citrus ones that work really well because they are eco-friendly and they still clean, and then your house will smell good.
I'm
on the outside.
On the outside too. On the outside and the inside.
Yeah, I'm going to throw a little bit out there too, because I was watching someone on YouTube who was doing a cleaning, and one of the comments kind of sparked my imagination, which is, if you are cleaning your vinyl siding because there's a bunch of dirt that looks like it has splashed up on there, and you don't have a dog who's shaking around there, this might be the symptom, and you need to identify what the cause is. And in this case, they had a gutter that was constantly overflowing, so it was overflowing, hitting the ground, and splashing up onto their house. And they're like, oh, we have to wash our house every year. And they're like, actually, you should be cleaning your gutters more often.
Yeah.
And so figuring out, like, if your house is constantly filthy in a certain area, you should identify some of those problems. Like, unless your neighbors are sitting there constantly, like, revving the engine of their monster truck and kicking up dirt, then you know what's going on.
Yeah, the kids are playing the slip a slide. And
yeah, right.
Let's get to the phone lines real quick here. Greg, you are on with Mr. Fix-It. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, afternoon, sir. Yeah, see, I got some uneven concrete around my home there, and what's your opinion of this, not necessarily mud jacking, but this new stuff they call foam jacking? Your opinion on that, and what have you heard as far as the durability and the effectiveness
sure.
of it?
Sure, yeah, great question, Greg. The original product that came out was mud jacking, and they would use that to even concrete. Then they switched to sand jacking, which wouldn't set up quite like a mud, but it was another product, and now they have the foam jacking, which again is a little bit better and better because of all the research they've done and durability of these things. So what it does is it injects some foam underneath there and raises the concrete. Then also it provides a little bit of a cushion so that when the ground moves again, it has a chance to absorb some of that movement rather than move the concrete. If you just do mud jacking and basically put concrete underneath there, if the ground moves again, then the whole slab moves. They've done this. Right. They found this out when they started doing steps or things into a home or into a garage that kept moving with the seasons and with the weather. So they'd take the concrete out, pour another slab, and do something with footings or try something a little deeper, and it would still move. Well, then they started saying, well, let's put about 8 inches of regular rigid styrofoam underneath it. And they would do that and pour concrete on top, and then it would tend to settle down a little bit because that styrofoam would absorb some of the earth pressures or ground pressure or whatever. So now that's where this injected foam comes in. It's just inject everything underneath there, so that'll give us the cushion.
Do you have any preference as far as name of companies you might like? You might recommend. Do you do that, sir?
I try to avoid that a little bit.
Yeah. Don't know. Will say that I'm going to throw this out there. We were thinking about doing the same thing at our house, Greg, and we ended up, you really have to sort of clue in on what really is the problem. If it's just the steps like Tim is talking about, this is usually a great solution. For us, it was all around the front of our garage, and it was up to our front door. And we ended up taking out all of the concrete and redoing it all. And when we took it out, I bet there was several feet of just nothing right by our garage because we needed a drain in our garage. And what was happening is all that water was draining right there. And there was just absolutely nothing under that concrete.
A big void underneath there.
Big void. Wow. And so looking back on it, you know, it was we were considering doing something like this. And then we thought, this might be a bigger problem because it's right at the edge of the garage. Yeah,
usually the mud jacking, foam jacking is for... smaller projects.
Yep,
to smaller adjustments, things like that.
So we ended up bringing in a lot of gravel and sort of redoing all of it. It needed to be filled in. So that's just a heads up. You might want to, hopefully
Thank you very much. Putting a Band-Aid on a
broken leg, you know, because we were definitely considering doing that. But yeah, hard to say company because I've not personally used any of them.
Right.
So
yeah,
I
haven't
give
got
any...
personal experience. So, but yeah. I know there's people out there that have and they could probably lead Greg in the right direction as far as some experience they've had from it.
Chuck is on for you, Mr. Fix-It. Chuck, go ahead.
Hi there. My name is Chuck Asplin, and I would like to address this subject of fixing your concrete. And it's fairly misunderstood. You know, there's a lot more cavities under concrete than anybody realizes.
Chuck, what's your experience in the sand jacking world?
I invented it.
You invented it.
And I have 10 patents on it.
Oh wow. My gosh.
Pending.
You're from Fargo, Chuck?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
and
Fargo is the epicenter of concrete problems. We have the worst soils in the world to build on.
Yeah.
Great for soybeans, bad for concrete.
Okay, so then you're the guy here who invents sand jacking. Take us back to the beginning. Were you doing something before sand jacking and you went, hey, I've got a better solution to this?
Yeah, I was an engineer in the Army, and my retirement was coming up. And I noticed a little lady walking by my house every other day. And then one day she was walking on the grass instead of on the sidewalk. But I went out after she got out of sight, and I had 40 feet of sidewalk that was glare ice because the snow had melted and then froze. Now, it was a good sidewalk, and I didn't want to drill a bunch of holes in it, so I reasoned that if I could pick it up and fill it with sand, it would look good, original, and it would stay, which it did. Well, it was quite a scene, and I had 10 people standing there watching me because it was sort of bizarre. And at the end of it, I was successful, and five of those people asked me to fix their concrete. So it ended up being just a part-time thing. The Army asked if I wanted to retire, and I retired 2 years later. I had 27 years in, and sand jacking was born. And I kept finding problems that needed to be solved, and I would develop tools to do that.
Wow, that's quite the story, Chuck.
Well, it's absolutely true. I work mostly on sidewalks. You know, in North Fargo, and then I kept branching out and finding new ways to do things. And I already had a good understanding of concrete, and I had a good understanding of the soils. So I was actually the guy to figure this out. And, you know, it's been a good run. I'm near the end of my work life, and there is no better way to fix your concrete than sand jacking. There are other methods.
And Chuck, let me ask you about that, because previous to sand jacking, they just referred to everything as mud jacking, correct?
Yes, that's the industry that started this 90 years ago. They drill a hole in your concrete, and they used to be really big holes, and they force mud underneath. And eventually the pressure in the mud overcomes the weight of the concrete and it pushes it up. So it'll lift. And they use their filling to get lift. But when they get the lift they want, they have to stop filling.
And then the genius behind sandjacking then would be that you can continue to fill once you have the lift and fill all of the crevices?
Well, it's difference is simply stated as sandjacking is pneumatic and mudjacking and foam jacking is hydraulic. They use a liquid under pressure to lift the concrete. And sandjacking, I push a nozzle underneath the concrete and I blow dry sand. The sand will actually volunteer to go 20, 30 feet away and fill. Now, you know, it sounds good on the surface, but the biggest reason for its longevity is the fact that it doesn't allow water to accumulate in large quantities. Since that's its main benefit, it actually stops the settlement because water is what makes it settle. And it gives you 10, 15, 20 years of life to concrete that would, well, have to be would have to be repaired again and again.
Well, Chuck, I really appreciate the phone call today. This has been some great education for us, and thanks for engineering something that puts us on the map there. So, yeah, you've done the world a good service. Appreciate it, and thank you for your service to our country as well, Chuck.
Well, you're welcome. I would do it all over again.
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for the call. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mr. Fix-It, Tim Noteboom is on the air. Okay, let's get to some of these. You got this. Let's see. Okay. On staining, my house is cedar siding done in latex stain before I bought the house. Can I transition to oil-based easily, or do I need to strip it first?
Yeah, I think that I would. My first inclination is to say you need to prep it first. If it's latex and you're trying to go to an oil, and I think you can go the other direction. So my first inclination would be, nope, you need to prep it. But I would confer with a painter, stain company, someone in that line of business, and I think they'll probably confirm the same thing.
Now, follow-up question. When it comes to staining something like a deck and you're going to use an oil base, that stuff's got to be dry, right? Like you've got to actually have several days of like dry weather before you can attempt it.
Yep. It'd be nice to clean it, wash it, you know, broom it, you know, when it's wet, let it rinse it off, let it dry really well. And like you said, it's several days because the moisture from washing it can get into that wood if it's got open spots. I would recommend several days. Same with a fence. If you're going to stain or paint a fence, give it several days to dry.
Man, I think it took a whole summer for us to do the fence. You know,
you get a day or two, and then all of a sudden it gets wet again, and then you start over.
Exactly. You start stripping, and then you think you got, and then you back up, and it just is. It's a test of patience.
It is.
Yep, it sure is.
Someone wants, this is actually a precursor to plant talk tomorrow.
I see this. I was like, are you confusing Tim with Dave?
Tips on planting new grass from Tim, please.
It's called hydro seeding. No, I don't know.
What did you do in your new house? Did you do sod?
No, we hydro seeded.
You did?
Because we had a sprinkler system.
Oh.
So it was easy to keep it wet and keep everything there.
But you didn't DIY that?
No.
Okay.
No. But yeah, I think that would be a better Dave question.
Yep.
Than that.
Yep. Okay.
That's fair. Cleaning windows. I was going to ask about this actually. I need to clean my windows really badly. Spring is just that time. You know, people are asking questions about cleaning their siding and everything like that. Cleaning windows. Do you take the whole thing out? Like, do you take the whole window out from the inside and wash it and then put it back in?
Oh, a storm window or a whole window?
I have like the windows that slide open.
Yeah, operating.
I have the sliders.
Yeah, you got sliders. So yeah, you can pull the sash out.
I sometimes
lift it out.
Take like the whole window out.
Yeah. And that way that's, you know, if you're going to wash the track and everything else like that, then that's the best way to do it. If that pull that slider window out.
But it's a pain, but
they are.
But those slider windows, like, I don't know if everybody else has this problem or if something is wrong in my house, but Gosh, those sliders get so dirty in there.
They do. You know,
I mean, black dirt in there.
If you've got, if you're exposed to one direction that's got some sort of field or gravel road or something that gets
dusty.
Nope,
just in town.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. They get dirty.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And they're probably white.
Yeah, they're white.
So everything is really going to show. But yeah, we don't, I've got casements, and so we just
get
the insides washed in and out and lean out the window as far as you can sometimes.
Yep. Yeah. Do you have a product that you use on the outside with, like, your hose that you recommend?
I've never tried one with the hose sprayers. No, I've heard, you know, mixed reviews on those.
Yeah, I mean, they're not great, but, you know, it kind of gets the job done if you don't want to pay for it. Yes.
That is for maintaining. So I will tell you this much. If it's been, like, years since you've gotten to those second-story windows, you need to get up there with newspaper and some vinegar, and you need to give them a good once-over. But then after that, if once every 2 months you use one of those during the summer months,
spray them off,
you're fine, right? But if they are grody and gross and, you know, you haven't done anything with them, you still got to put a little
elbow grease on them, just to get that initial wipe.
Here, you know, this is a good question. Where do you stand on using a programmable thermostat, Mr. Fix-It? Does it really save money if the furnace has to work harder to make the jump from cold to warm to heat air and cold objects? If you are at a consistent temp, furnace can hold temp and objects hold their heat.
I do have a programmable thermostat, but when our setback times, whether it's winter or summer, we try not to go more than about 3 to 5 degrees. Again, I know there's physics on this and it says, well, you know, it's no different if it shuts off and lets it cool down 10 degrees. It takes the same amount of energy to heat it all back up rather than to maintain it. But I still like a little more consistent temperature, 3 to 5 degrees, and heats up rather quickly. And so we program ours that when our alarm clock rings, it's up to what temperature we want. And then it pretty much shuts off because it stays warm while we're getting ready, and then we leave the house, and then it cools off for, you know, 3 or 5 degrees.
I would also say Tim Noteboom got me to do this right away, which is you might have a programmable thermostat, but you still need to shut those vents, right? Like, if you've got 2 bedrooms that you're not using during the winter months, partially to fully close those vents, and that way you're not overly heating that room when you don't need it anyway.
Yep. Yeah, and then the same thing, balance your house in the winter and summer. So if you've got a basement or a second story, start opening or closing some of those vents because you think of where most of the heating and cooling is going to go.
There you go. Yeah. See, Tim Noteboom. He's a smart man.
Man, that wraps it for us today.
That was a quick one.
That was really fast, wasn't it?
It was.
It felt really fast anyways. Okay, thanks, Mr. Fix-It. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks for all the good advice, and we'll see you back here. Oh, my gosh, it's going to be May already.
Yeah.
Okay, let me check the date for us since we... Oh, it is May Day, May 1st.
Is it really?
We're going to see you back.
I don't even bring a May basket, do I?
No,
we'll bring you a May basket.
Okay, there we go. I like that.
That's a deal.
All right.